From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
I'm Dr. Marina Kurian. Rachel Lustgarten is joining me. She's a clinical and registered dietitian at the Comprehensive Weight Control Center at Weill Cornell. And joining us is Dr. Lou Aroney, who is a Sanford I. Weill Professor of Metabolic Research in the Comprehensive Weight Control Center and also in the Department of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism. Welcome. How are you, Lou?
Thank you very much, Marina. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Thank you so much. So are you writing a book? I know you were on telemedicine. I was saying that I also had telehealth set up before this, but you guys were really into doing telehealth before the pandemic and the quarantine started. So, you know, how did that go? How was it, et cetera?
Well, the kind of practice that we have, managing patients with obesity, managing post-operative patients who've had bariatric surgery, lends itself very well to telemedicine. People prefer it because they don't have to come all the way in to our office for a 15-minute or 30-minute visit. They get to stay home. So it saves not only a lot of time, but a lot of money to do things that way. We're seeing 95% of our usual patient volume, 95%. We think we're going to go above 100% and be able to see people more efficiently using telemedicine compared to the usual patient visits. So I think that telemedicine is the future of an obesity management center, you know, something like our Comprehensive Weight Control Center. We've even built an entire platform, which we call IntelliHealth, in order to deliver care that is just like what we deliver in our Comprehensive Weight Control Center.
And Dr. Aroney, having worked in your practice and with you for so many years, I can really attest as a dietitian that this is a program that has really worked and has made my job much easier to be able to connect with patients before quarantine. And now during this time, like we were set up in such an excellent way. And I think that our patients have done so well in these past couple of months, almost surprisingly well because of it. And I want to get into some of the takeaways and what you have found in speaking to your patients. Dr. Aroney, but we talked about parallels between that setting of going off to college for the first time and reduced activity and increased stress and more access to late night snacks, perhaps, and the parallels that people are facing or have faced during quarantine. In general, how have your patients been doing during this time, and have you seen people really thriving, or have you seen people have a lot of challenges?
That's a great question, Rachel. You know, I think that some people have actually used this opportunity to do things that they haven't been able to do before, like do modest amounts of exercise. The people who are usually running around a lot, they've been able to put their mask on, get outside, and start walking. Other people, however, have been surrounded by food at home. And as you probably heard, more people are baking than ever. more people are cooking than ever. And it's not necessarily the healthiest stuff. But, you know, in general, not eating out. So we've seen a couple of patients who would eat out most meals. They would entertain or they would be entertained for business. And they've lost weight because the food that they're cooking is not nearly as fattening. They're not eating as much. So we've seen things go both ways in our patients. So it's not consistent, is what I would say.
So what are you seeing, though, when you talk to patients? Are people falling into old habits? Are they, like, what do you think, or what would be, like, one of the suggestions to try and you know, curtail this sort of fall back on old habits or creating new bad habits? Like, I certainly maybe a third of my telehealth is patients that I've put on meds, you know, to help them through the pandemic and also to try and get them to lose weight. Like, certainly patients who have surgery, my bariatric surgery patients who have some weight regain, or are having inadequate weight loss, you know, I try to tag them early when I'm looking at their trajectory of weight loss and I put them on meds. So, you know, what are you seeing?
Well, I think, sure. I mean,
and also, Dr. Roney, as you get into it, let's talk about some of the options that are out there, because this is something that commonly comes up on our show and we're excited to be back. We haven't discussed this in a while, and there's been so much conversation about, you know, the overarching implications of COVID. And now we're talking about weight management. And I think our listeners really want to hear what options are there out for them now. And if they wanted to reach out to a doctor, what are some things that they could ask about and learn about as tools for weight management?
Sure. So, you know, we've studied a number of different medical weight management options, both on their own and also in the setting of bariatric surgery. As you know, Marina, that we've seen really good results when we add medication to patients who have bariatric surgery who may not be doing well. And others have now seen the same thing. So it's pretty clear that by adding medication to surgery, you can get a good result. If you look at what medications can work, the things that we're using are medicines like metformin. As you know, our favorite medicine is metformin. Metformin is a medicine to prevent diabetes. It's used as its most commonly prescribed medicine for treating diabetes. Recently, it's been shown that it has an independent mechanism reducing body weight. So researchers now discovered how it works. And what it does is it stimulates a hormone from the intestine called GDF-15, and that makes you feel full. So metformin, because it's been around for more than 40 years, very safe, pregnant women get it if they are developing gestational diabetes now, we tend to use that as our first-line treatment. The other medicines we use are phentermine, which has been around for 60 years. We use that in low doses in people who are not at a high cardiovascular risk. They don't have a risk of heart attack or stroke. They don't have diabetes and are on insulin. We use a medicine called topiramate, which is the most widely prescribed preventative for migraine headaches. And we use liraglutide, which is an injectable medication. We find that that can be extremely helpful. And a number of others. So those are the four most common. And there are others that we also use. And we tend to use medicines in combination. So there are options that are available. It's not the same thing as before, where you just use one medicine and that's it. We find that in surgery, that could work in patients who've had surgery. But often we need to use medicines together in order to get the best results and durable long-term results. But when we've used them in combination, we have patients who've lost 60, 70, you know, even 100 pounds when we use multiple medical therapies.
Yeah, and half that battle, you know, I certainly have seen that as well in some of my medical weight loss patients who are like, you know, I don't know if I want surgery. Can we try medicine? And I'll put them on usually a combo, but I'll start off with one, obviously, and then layer and add on. But the weight loss is very good. It's not as quick as with surgery. And then hopefully the maintenance is going to be good. But again, we run into some of the problems of insurance coverage, you know, and that is also something that pushes people to decide, if certainly if they have 100 pounds or more, that they're going to do surgery versus 100 pounds or more to lose, sorry, that they're going to do surgery versus, you know, medical route for weight loss.
Sure. Treatment for obesity should definitely be a medical benefit. It should be included as part of medical benefits, and it hasn't been because right. It's been considered to be personal, a matter of personal responsibility. We have been doing a pilot program with an insurance company and their employees, which is the way that they test new programs. And what we've seen is that it appears to save money, so that you know, we're looking at this right now. So we previously showed that an online, you know, telehealth weight management program saved money. It cost less to deliver the program and they saved more in healthcare costs so that they were actually making money delivering the program. Now we're doing the same thing with medical treatment, and we're seeing the same result, but we're getting about twice the weight loss that we were getting before. And so we believe we're going to save more money, and that ultimately that they will begin to cover this as a routine benefit. So we're hopeful that we're finally getting the kind of evidence that insurers need to convince them that it's better to treat. When you look at why don't they cover it, some of the issues that have been described are that you think about 35 or 40% of the people you insure have obesity right now. And having to cover that as benefit seems daunting. You feel like you'll go bankrupt if you're an insurer, one in three of the people who you insure have to get this. But what we're seeing is that, think about it. If you get someone to lose just 5% of their body weight, it reduces their risk of developing diabetes by 50%. Obviously, if you have surgical weight loss where you lose 25% of your body weight, your risk of diabetes goes way, way down. You reduce it more than 95%. But even a 5 or 10% weight loss gives you a significant health benefit. And that's what I believe insurance companies will be willing to pay for. In patients who have more severe obesity, I think they're going to start paying for surgery. And, one of the interesting things about the COVID epidemic is that it has shown many people the severe health issues and the physical issues that are related to obesity. Because, as you know, obesity is turning out to be one of the major risk factors for a bad outcome in patients who get COVID-19. I was just looking at data from our institution, and NYU has the same data showing that if you look at people in the ICU, these are people who are admitted to the ICU, those of normal weight, they're about 72 years of age. Those who are overweight are about 62 years of age. And those with obesity are 52 years of age on average. So it means a 20-year differential if you have obesity. So much younger people are winding up in the intensive care unit if they have obesity is really the conclusion from that kind of research. And everybody is seeing this around the country.
Lou, did I tell you that when I took the ABOM exam, which is the American Board of Obesity Medicine exam, I read that part of the Change Your Biology diet just for a refresher on the meds, because right before I took the test, because I was like, I need help. So I did use your book as a resource, which is not one of the listed resources for the exam, but hello, it could be, because you summarized some of the meds really well. And those are books that are available to anyone listening, and they were great, great books. Great points brought up in them.
Are you seeing, Marina, that patients are starting to gain weight, or with the medical regimens you're using, are you seeing them lose? What's going on with your patients? I'm interested to hear.
So I would say in terms of the medical weight loss people, the people that have started on meds, they are losing for the most part, or they're not gaining. So when I would expect like a pound or two a month or a pound a week, so 2 to 4 pounds a month I would expect to see, I might not see that. I might see two or a stable weight. But then I know that if they weren't on the medication, they'd be up. For my surgical patients, I'm really looking at whether they had hit a plateau and they weren't moving. And then if I put meds on, they usually start to lose again. And then the ones that are, several years out from surgery that had weight gain and they're trying to lose, similar thing that if you put them on meds, they will lose. And being home, though, that weight loss trajectory may not be as steep as it would have been if they were not in the middle of a quarantine where there's so many unknowns. And then, economic unknowns, and things like that.
When are you going to go back to doing surgery?
Oh, I am actually back. I've been operating since mid-May at one of my hospitals. And started at the other as well in July. And I'm not at full force. I know a lot of my colleagues around the country are doing their same volume. And certainly my partners that you know quite well are back to full volume. My patients, a lot of them seem to want to go in September or the end of the summer. And I'm like, we're really low rates of coronavirus right now. Like, this is actually the perfect time to have surgery in New York. I will say that I have not heard of any patient undergoing elective surgery at any of the centers across the country, because I'm in a lot of different groups and, you know, we all do chat, that none of the patients undergoing elective surgery have contracted coronavirus, because I think every hospital has taken, or surgery center has taken this as a great onus, and they are making sure that they have separate areas and they're testing everybody before they have surgery. I've been tested, you know, all the healthcare providers are being tested. We're not doing it every week. Some of the institutions are doing weekly testing. We're more, once you test negative, you know, you monitor your symptoms and you take your temperature, that level of concern and monitoring is what we're doing.
One of the issues now is who should be the first person or first people up to have elective procedures like bariatric surgery. How do you decide which patients to have first? Because there's got to be a big backlog of cases, and that's really an important matter for discussion. Is it based on their BMI? Is it based on their health risks?
So we've discussed this amongst the surgeons, and I think every institution looks at it differently. And there is a backlog of patients, but this is true for ortho, urology. There's saying in some of the healthcare systems that they have a 17,000 case backlog. So for us, you know, for me, it's more, you know, which patients want to go. But I'm not doing 20 cases a week or even 10 cases a week. You know, I'm usually doing 4 to 6. So for me, I'm just trying to get back up to, you know, about 6 cases a week. And the patients are kind of determining on their own because of their desire to go for surgery, or they want the summer before they do it. So that's what's limiting it. I have no concerns about doing a sicker patient now because our coronavirus risk is fairly low. And I would say that, as I said before, in the hospitals, they're doing a really great job of exposing patients to coronavirus. So, you know, I have no qualms doing my sicker patients now, just as I have no qualms about doing my patients that have less comorbid conditions, because I know that with both of them, with our early recovery programs and clinical pathways, that we're able to get them out of the hospital usually the next day. So they're in, like, you know, they're usually only in one day. And if they stay longer, they're in, you know, COVID negative units. So to me, it hasn't mattered. We've done it on who's ready and who wants to go is how we've done it.
Dr. Aroney, I know we are so fortunate in our program that we've been able to maintain such a high level of patient follow-up and new patient coming in. Do you think that's the general sentiment, you know, across the city and across the country in terms of people paying attention to their overall health, managing their weight during this time? Or do you think sometimes some of these bigger concerns that we have, you know, financial concerns or just kind of, you know, the state of our country, concerns like that sometimes take over and people pay less attention to, you know, self-care? Is this something that you think is a bigger issue, and is it resolving? If so, or do you think this is something that we'll continue to see, you know, in the next year, or at least in the next couple months?
I think that is a big issue, that people are under so much stress. They're under economic stress. Women who work have their children home. How do you take care of the children? So there are a number of things that are higher on people's priority than their weight. But at the same time, we know that weight is a risk factor for bad outcomes in COVID. So that has stopped people from completely forgetting about it. And so I think that it's important to keep some kind of a balance. I don't think people are going to lose a lot of weight during this period of time, but I think that they're going to, people with diabetes who know that they're at a lot of risk are going to quarantine more carefully, or at least they should quarantine more carefully. There are a number of cases of people who didn't and wound up getting quite ill. It's interesting. There are patients, and I'd be interested to hear what you have to say, Marina. In looking at the patients who we take care of, we haven't seen anyone get severely ill. Our patients are generally somewhat reduced. I mean, they're not at their ideal body weight by any stretch of the imagination, but we've seen that by and large, our patients, while they may have gotten COVID, they have not gotten severely ill. And that's with one exception. We had one patient who wound up in the intensive care unit, and she was at her highest weight. We hadn't seen her for a long time. We saw her a month or two before, and she was at her highest weight ever, having stopped medications and all the other efforts, and then got COVID about 2 weeks after that and wound up in the intensive care unit. And so one of the interesting thoughts that's come up is, gee, is losing weight, is bariatric surgery protective against deterioration because it prevents potentially the severe inflammation and the clotting complications that are really lethal in COVID?
So I think weight loss is key. Rachel, what have you seen with your patients? Have they contracted it? How have they been doing?
No, I've had very few COVID patients, and my patients have actually done, I was very surprised at the beginning of this to see how well they were doing. All the things that we have discussed, Marina, people being more thoughtful about meal planning, menu planning, not necessarily because of weight management, but because they had to, right? Because they didn't have access to being at the store all the time or grocery delivery all the time. They had to plan what they'd be eating for the week and for the day and kind of jamming it all in, childcare, working from home, all of these different pieces, trying to be active. So I was very pleasantly surprised, and I continue to be, about how thoughtful and mindful my patients have been in terms of like implementing all of these healthy and positive behavior changes that I've been speaking to them about for months and months before this whole thing started. Likewise, my patients that are new to me that I've met during quarantine have also been really mindful and are doing really well. I think that one of the challenges and one of the reasons that I'm so excited that our show is back on the air is that sometimes, you know, I think you guys were both hinting at this, that in the setting of so many, you know, just large scale issues, for some people, it feels almost, you know, self-indulgent or self-absorbed or too much of a focus on self to reach out to see a dietitian or a weight management physician at this time, that there's kind of people have bigger fish to fry. And some of the statistics that we have heard and continue to hear, Dr. Roney, if you wouldn't mind repeating what you had said before about those statistics, I thought were so startling, that 20 years earlier, we're seeing people with obesity presenting in emergency rooms and in ICUs at a much younger average age than people who are not with obesity, makes it clear that this is a really important issue to tackle.
Right. What I was saying, Rachel, is that if you look at the people who are hospitalized in the intensive care units at our hospital system, and I'm going to bet that it's the same at NYU's hospital system, what it shows is that for people with obesity, the average age is 20 years younger. The average age is 20 years younger than people of normal weight. And it's 10 years younger than people who are overweight. So it's pretty clear that there is increased risk, not of getting the disease, but of having a severe form of it, which requires going into an intensive care unit. And when you talk to people who have been working in the ICU, they'll tell you the exact same thing. They can see it with their eyes, that all the younger people are people with obesity. This isn't always true, so I don't want to say that that's absolutely the case, but you're more likely to have severe consequences because you live in a pro-inflammatory environment. Your inflammatory system, your clotting systems are kind of revved up if your weight is higher. And then when the infection hits, it sets everything off in a really bad way.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Doctor Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Doctor Radio.